Talking on all political subjects and taking on all callers, this is Matt Flynn Direct with your host, Matt Flynn.
Welcome to Matt Flynn Direct, coming to you statewide, big media. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. No subject is off limits and all points of view are welcome. Remember, you're not woke if you don't know history. You're not woke unless and until you know history. I'm going right to the front lines of history in the making. A lot of it being made even today. A story that just broke a little bit ago. Brittany Griner, WNBA basketball star, has been swapped for a Russian arms dealer and murderer, unfortunately. She's on her way back to the United States. Very, very good news. Brittany Griner, basketball player, was playing in Russia, and in her bag had some kind of oil, some kind of cannabis-type oil. And they used her like a pawn. There is no rule of law over there. She had physicians here saying that they prescribed it for her. She got well over 10 years, 12 years. Put in a very harsh penal colony. At the same time, there's a former Marine named Paul Whelan, who's serving 16 years. He's an American. They picked him up on false espionage charges. And he was not part of this swap. I think on one level, you have to say that you take it one step at a time. You get one person, you get him out, and then you work on the other one. Biden has already gotten another Army veteran out a little while ago, you may remember. The problem with Russia right now, it's a fascist state, authoritarian state, a genocidal, sadistic state. It's not like it was back in the 90s when I visited it, Moscow and St. Petersburg, with a delegation from the Justice Department giving talks to Russian lawyers on our Constitution and on our civil and criminal justice system as they try to transition from communism. And for 10 years, they had a semblance of freedom. Then Putin came in about 20 years ago, and they have their own little Hitler. I would advise against your going to Russia. The State Department has suggested that any American citizen in Russia get out immediately. They will look for people that they can arrest. They'll plant things in your bag. With the Army guy that just got released a little bit ago, he was having a few beers. He came out of a bar. A couple of thugs jumped him, and he fought back. And then he was sentenced to a multi-year prison term for fighting. They'd been set up by the Russian government. Brittany Griner was foolish enough to bring this stuff in her bag. Paul Whelan, I don't know. They'll continue to work on Paul Whelan. And I think one of the reasons that Putin... he's a genocidal sadist, but he's crafty. And I think he realized that the longer he keeps Brittany Griner and abuses her, there's a large segment of our population worldwide, because she is African-American and she is LGBT, that he is alienating other constituencies. It's one reason why I let her go. But there's no constituency advocating for Paul Whelan except veterans, fellow veterans like me, and Americans in general, and look for that to continue, unfortunately. Let me tell you something else. Status on Ukraine right now. Ukrainians are beating the stuffing out of the Russians on the ground. The Wagner Group, that sadistic group of mercenaries that's owned by, it's a company owned by Yevgeny Prigozhin, who is a sadist himself, oligarch, close to Putin. They had one of the Wagner group try to desert, and they executed him by beating him to death with a sledgehammer. The European Union and NATO branded Russia a terror state. I think we should do the same, and I'll explain why. This Yevgeny Prigozhin then sent a violin case, and you open it up, and there was a bloody sledgehammer in it. There's fake blood. This is something the mafia does. These people are animals. They're Nazis. They're mafia. but they have nuclear weapons. So Biden's doing the smart thing. Going to bring Sweden and NATO in. Sweden into NATO. Finland into NATO. Finland has an 800-plus mile border with Russia. Putin is very fearful about expanding NATO. Well, he just doubled the NATO borders that has they have with his country. And Finland now has invited the United States to put nuclear weapons in Finland. That would be like Russia having nuclear weapons in Canada, 10 miles from the Montana border. Putin, to say that he has miscalculated is an understatement. But when you're a genocidal sadist and you have complete control over your country, there's not much people can do about it except assassinate you. The word out of Russia right now is that Putin is making plans for three escape routes for him. One is the United Arab Emirates. That's a Muslim country in the Middle East, series of emirates. They're crooked as a dog's hind leg. Money talks. But on the other hand, believe it or not, he might have to convert to Islam if he goes there. I don't think he'd give a rat's patoot about that, but we'll see. The central one, the other one is the Central African Republic, which has been kept in power by the Wagner Group and others who just murder opponents in that country. Crooked president, he's looking at that. But Africa is a dicey place. If he goes to Africa, there's an awful lot of freedom fighters and terrorist hunters who would be after him. Third one, believe it or not, is South America, Venezuela and Argentina. Argentina, I can't understand. Argentina is friendly to the United States. I know a lot of Nazi war criminals went to Argentina, but some of them were tracked down and brought back to justice. I do not think that Putin would live long in Argentina. Now, Venezuela has essentially a communist government right now and is hostile to the United States. The Venezuela people are not. They're good people. But the truth is, if he goes to Venezuela, he's exposed too. The only way to stop the invasion of Ukraine, it's not an invasion, it's a genocide. They're sitting back with these missiles and just bombing hospitals, bombing schools, bombing electrical stations, bombing sanitary facilities. They're just doing it to destroy the infrastructure of the country so that civilians and women and children who are still there die. And Ukraine is a lot colder than Wisconsin. It's a lot colder than Wisconsin right now, and it'll get even colder in January and February. So the objective has got to be to kill Putin. I think that people in power in Russia know that. The thing is, we don't want somebody who's even more of a sadist than Putin getting in, like Yevgeny Prigozhin, the head of the Wagner Group. I think he's got to go too. I'm going to lay out a number of things that I think we should be doing. One piece of breaking news today, by the way, before I start that, there was an explosion in Sevastopol in the Crimea. That's a port. Sevastopol is a port in the Crimea. Crimea was part of Ukraine. The Ruskies went in and captured it in 2014. Obama didn't do anything about it. Trump didn't do anything about it after that. Trump's being bribed by Putin. Trump praised Putin. Trump praised Putin's invasion of Ukraine in February by saying that Putin's a genius. He, quote, this is Trump now. He got all that real estate for $2 in sanctions, end quote. Crooked Mike Pompeo, Trump's Secretary of State, said back then, quote, I have a lot of respect for Vladimir Putin, end quote. We're not putting up with that in this country, I'll tell you that. The Ukrainians are smart and they're tough, and they have adapted drones. They've hit air bases deep inside Russia, some not too far from Moscow, Russia. And now Sevastopol, and they're going to keep it up. The truth is that it's not going to really bite the Russian people until it's apartment buildings that get hit and power stations. Now, the problem with that is at some point, does that induce Russia to use nuclear weapons? Russia's afraid of that right now. Putin made a point after a lot of his people have been threatening stuff like that by coming out yesterday and saying we would not use it as a first strike. Putin lies, of course. Just giving you the background right now, here's what we should be doing. Joe Biden, give the Ukrainians planes and give the Ukrainians 180-mile HIMARS. You've given them 50-mile HIMARS, and they've done wonderful things with it. If they had 180-mile HIMARS, they could take out Russian ships in the Black Sea who are launching strikes against Ukraine. And they could target Russian airfields, and they've been careful only to do that. They have not been doing it to apartment buildings. They've not, for instance, taken out St. Basil's, their major cathedral in Moscow. They have not taken out St. Isaac's, their major cathedral, St. Petersburg. They have not taken out the Kremlin, the Duma, the Winter Palace up in St. Petersburg. There's a lot they could be taking out. And I'll tell you what, if Russia did not have nuclear weapons, that would all be toast. But I think, Joe, I know that you are being stabbed in the back by McCarthy and a lot of Republicans and by Germany. And France is wobbly, but you're tough. You're a good leader. Best president I heard somebody say since FDR. And I'll tell you what. Get them planes, Joe. Get them 180-mile HIMARS and tell them do not hit civilian targets in Moscow or St. Petersburg. And they haven't so far. But hit the hell out of all these Russian airfields, Joe. Secondly, impound the $300 billion that we have in our banks of the Russian government. Europe may do the same with their $300 billion and give that to Ukraine to rebuild. Do it now. Third, sanction everybody with Russian citizenship. Throw them out of the country if they're here on visas. No more tennis stars, no more chess players, no more of these people coming in saying, well, I'm not going to talk about the invasion. If you belong to a Nazi culture, you're part of the Nazi culture. Until you're incentivized to go back and kill Putin, kill Yevgeny Prozoyan and these people. Kill Ramzan Hardikov, the Russian terrorist guy. Kill Lukashenko in Belarus. I want to be hearing about your coming to my country. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break. Backbiter, tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Tell them that God's gonna cut you down. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Lines are open, 844-967-2789. Well, Donald Trump, unfortunately, I got to discuss him again. His team say they've suddenly discovered a few more classified documents that he claimed, A, he didn't steal them. B, if he did steal them, they were unclassified by him. C, if he did steal them and they weren't unclassified by him, that he has immunity. I swear that's his defense. He said it. Now, one of the first things you learn in law school, all right, one of the first things, you're representing a guy who's accused of murder. It is possible to have an alibi defense. Say, I couldn't possibly be being the guy that murdered him. I was in New York and he was murdered here in Milwaukee. Okay. If you do that, you have to give a certain amount, 10 or 15 days notice to the prosecution in advance. But let's say you do that. The second thing is another defense to murder charges. It was self-defense, for instance. You can say, listen, I was out there minding my own business. The guy comes at me, shoots with a gun, and he misses me, and he's cocking it again, and I hit him over the head with a club, and I was defending myself. The first thing you learn in law school is you don't get up in front of the jury and say, ladies and gentlemen, we have two defenses. We have an alibi defense. My guy was in New York at the time of murder. And second, even if he did hit the guy, it was self-defense. You don't say that. The average juror doesn't like that. Trump is an Trump takes this to a new level. He goes, no, I didn't steal any classified documents. Number two, if I did steal any classified documents, I unclassified them before I left. And number three, even if I stole them and I did not unclassify them before I leave, I have immunity. Seriously, that is exactly what he said. Now, what's the background on this, and why is it not a laughing matter, even though I am so incredulous about this guy that there's only one way to handle it is with a little humor. There's a guy, originally, he told the FBI and the DOJ, I have no classified documents. They knew he did because there were gaps in their inventory. I don't know how dumb this guy is. What, he thinks that they just don't keep track of what they got? So then he says, okay, I'll give you what I do have. And in January, February of this year, he gave him a bunch of stuff, and it was all newspaper articles. That's all I have. They said, no, it isn't. No, it isn't. Then they subpoena him in May. At that time, there's video of him directing the loading of cartons of documents at an airport to fly to Bedminster, New Jersey. Now, how many guys who are billionaires and run a company are there at the airport yelling at workers to load stuff on a plane? Give me a break. Then they finally get together in June, and their lawyer says, we got nothing. Then in August, they do a search warrant, and they find a bunch of stuff lying around, some of it in a closet underneath a room that's the bridal changing suite. Then they find stuff on his closet floor, find it all over the place. Then he says, I've given you everything. Then they say to the judge, no, he hasn't. There's still gaps. So the judge says, look some more. Now they just came back, said they finally looked in a storage locker and they found some more. Look, we lost a disproportionate number of FBI and CIA agents to capture and execution by our enemies the year after Trump left when he stole these documents. He's shown them to somebody. His motive is irrelevant. Maybe he's being bribed. Maybe he's being blackmailed. He stole them for a reason. He didn't transfer them up to Bedminster for the hell of it. We got to know what he has and who he showed him to. And there's more out there. There's more out there. And Trump's statement was this, quote, President Trump and his counsel continue to be cooperative and transparent, right? Despite the unprecedented, illegal, unwarranted attack against President Trump and his family by the weaponized DOJ, he will keep fighting against the outrageous politicization of law enforcement. The guy's a traitor to the United States. We're going to the lines. Andy of Beaver Dam, my friend, we have a few minutes before the break. What's on your mind today, Andy of Beaver Dam?
Well, Matt, I'm just so glad. I'm a second shifter as a person, and I'm so glad you're on this time of the day and everything.
Thank you.
You're so learned and so full of history, and you're a lawyer and Democratic, everything. I mean, it's all beautiful. And this guy that we elected in 16 is a total and complete disgrace to our generation. And you're laughing about it, which is true. What can you do? I mean, this guy is the most eccentric, narcissistic person that I could ever. He's beyond, beyond what you could think could even happen in human history, you know. And it's, why are we, you know, as a generation, we're constantly preoccupied with this, you know, Trump every day. He hasn't been president in 2 years, and we're still talking about it. But that's just the nature of the whole myth. You know, that's all I got to say. It's just, but yeah. We got to get to the bottom of so many things with this guy. You know, it's ridiculous. No,
amen. And he can't get back in 2 years. Well, let me tell you something else, Andy. How many more documents are out there? The FBI and DOJ say there are some, and he's dribbling them out. Now he finds what, a couple more in a storage locker? What the hell? He didn't look at the storage locker before when he had the subpoena, and there are more. And we have so many, a disproportionate number of CIA and FBI agents executed by our enemies the CIA sent station memos around to the station saying, be much more careful with the information you disclose. But it's Trump that's disclosing this stuff. This guy's a danger to the United States. Going to a break. The lines are open. 844-967-2789. A lot more after the break.
Believe me, baby. I know it, baby. You know it, too.
Welcome back to Matt Flynn Direct. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. We're going right to the lines. Wisco Paul, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Wisco Paul?
Well, good afternoon, Matt. Thanks for taking my call. I said this before. I don't know what law Trump didn't break while he was in office. It's just an awful thing. But I want to touch base on the Moore versus Harper before the Supreme Court justice that comes from North Carolina. And my understanding, three of the six conservatives on the Supreme Court are trying to get some compromise, but that's not even, I don't think that's even good. It should be just thrown out. I mean, that's all about democracy. Do you think the Supreme Court in the end will throw it out, or do you think they're going to do something? Well, everybody should be scared about it, I think. Letting it stand. Thanks, Matt.
That's an excellent question. I want to drill down on that. It's a very, very important issue you raise. And Moore v. Harper, they had oral argument on it the other day, and they'll issue the decision sometime this spring or early summer. In Moore v. Harper, the ostensible issue, in other words, the surface issue, is the Republican legislature in North Carolina gerrymandered kind of the way they did here in Wisconsin, just, you know, killing the Democratic Party. It was appealed to the North Carolina Supreme Court, and at the time they had a majority of Democrats, and they reversed it and made fair maps. And that's what got appealed. Since then, the Democrats on the Supreme Court are not on there anymore. It's a Republican Supreme Court. So if it goes back to the state, it'll undoubtedly end up sort of the way it is here in Wisconsin right now. However, here's the issue. There's a thing called the independent legislature theory. And it's a bad theory. It's not constitutionally based. That says that the state legislators can decide anything they want to about federal elections, and their state Supreme Court can't question it, even if it's in violation of the state constitution, and their governor can't veto it, even though he normally has the veto power. So you have these gerrymandered legislatures. So imagine they're like Voss in our legislature. They can set any maps. They can do anything they want with the elections, and they can affect gerrymander themselves forever. They will continue to gerrymander, and then 10 years later, gerrymander again, and nobody can do anything about it. And they could even do things like reduce the voting hours, reduce the number of voting machines at polls. In Arizona, they said that each of the counties had one voting place. Well, Phoenix has millions of people. If you had one voting place in Phoenix, 95% of them wouldn't get to vote, whereas the small counties might have a few thousand people. That was overturned by a federal judge, but if they went the other way in Moore v. Harper, they couldn't overturn that. Paul makes the point, and it is true, and this is anecdotal. People infer things from the questions that are asked. So the experts that have looked at this look on the Supreme Court as having three separate tranches of judges. They're the three really right-wing anti-democratic judges, which are Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Samuel Alito. They're bad news. They're enemies of democracy. They're enemies of the United States. They're tarantulas. Then you have the three Democratic justices, and they will do the right thing. But you have three other conservatives. And remember, I talk about the six tarantulas because six of them are Republicans. Well, these three others are Roberts, Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett. Roberts is the most moderate simply because he was appointed by George W. Bush, not Trump. But Amy Comey Barrett and Kavanaugh have shown hints of being somewhat disturbed by the ramifications of what they do in Moore v. Harper for this reason. If they go with the independent legislature theory, it would mean that the state legislators will pick the electors, not the voters. So you don't need fake electors anymore. Those will be the real electors. It's whoever Voss and the legislature want. It doesn't matter how you vote. The problem with that is that right now, states are badly gerrymandered like that for the Republicans that comprise 307 electors. And it only takes 270 electors to elect a president. They could elect a president in the Republican Party in perpetuity, and they could also gerrymander themselves in perpetuity, and this country would stagnate, would not have a democracy. If that happens, and I hope it does not, I think there will be violence. I do not advocate it, I do not want it, and I'll do everything I can to stop it. But you can't tell a free people that we're going to have commie government all of a sudden, because Alito, Gorsuch, and a couple of the others, Clarence Thomas and maybe two of the others, decide it. There's a much deeper, more fundamental issue here. We have three branches of government, two of them elected and one are not. The elected ones are Congress and the president, the executive. The one that isn't is the Supreme Court. Only one of them has the power to overrule the other two and say what they did is unconstitutional. At least we recognize it for now. The Supreme Court that's unelected can say that the president did something unconstitutional and tell them not to do it. And they can say that Congress did something unconstitutional and tell them not to do it. But here's a question. If the Supreme Court does something unconstitutional, who tells them they can't do it? And the answer is George Washington, the Minutemen at Lexington and Concord. The answer is Abraham Lincoln and the Union Army. That's what happened. Back at the formation of our country, England did exactly what the Supreme Court is doing right now, the king and the aristocracy and British judges. And they would rule on what we could do. And it took a revolution to stop that. In 1860, when Lincoln was elected, the South said, we have a right to secede. And you can read the Constitution to say that if you want. But Lincoln read the Declaration of Independence, too, that says all men are created equal. Lincoln said, you can't secede. Some judges disagreed with him. The Maryland Supreme Court issued an order. And you know what he said? He said, jump in the lake. If the U.S. Supreme Court in 1861 had ordered the Union Army to withdraw from the field because the South had the right to succeed, Lincoln would have put them in prison. Lincoln was a great president. George Washington was a great president. We are getting to that point. Can the one unelected branch of government, which can overrule the other two branches based on the Constitution, be immune from unconstitutional conduct themselves? And if not, how do we enforce it? Let me throw something else in, because I'm not speaking lightly here. There are times when the Supreme Court was absolutely essential. In Brown versus Board of Education, they said separate but equal in education was not good anymore. You had to desegregate schools. If there were no Supreme Court, schools would be segregated to this day. And you know something? They are anyway, because of living patterns. Think of where you grew up. Think of where you went to school. And don't tell me that there was perfect integration. In Baker v. Carr, in the southern states, Alabama, every county had one state senator. So the big urban counties had one state senator. And counties with hardly anybody in them had one state senator. Obviously, there were a lot of Republicans running things. The Supreme Court, great decision by Justice Brennan, said, no, you have to have one man, one vote. And you know what Alabama said? Wait a minute, you don't have it in the federal government. You don't have one man, one vote in the U.S. Senate. Wyoming has two senators and California has two senators. And you know what Brennan said? He said, so what? That was a deal that was struck back in 1788. And that I can't go back on that. But what I can do is tell you what to do. And he did the right thing. New York Times versus Sullivan, the Southern states, any criticism of the government, they could bring a libel action. You wouldn't have newspapers, TV, and radio right now. Because every time they criticize anybody in government, powerful forces that could pay the attorney fees would come in and sue them and put them out of business. U.S. Supreme Court in New York Times versus Sullivan, 1964, said, no, if it's a public figure, an official like that, you have to prove actual malice. And actual malice is not what you may think. It doesn't mean they don't like a guy. It means that you did it knowing it was false, or so recklessly you could have known it was false just by making a phone call. Those Baker v. Carr, New York Times versus Sullivan, and Brown versus Board of Education are essential components to our modern democracy. But now we have six tarantulas who are about to rule on a case where they could say that Voss-type legislatures in enough states to elect a president every time and more pick the electors, and you don't. How do you like that? They are also going to say they can gerrymander up the wazoo and there's nothing you can do about it, even if the state constitution opposes it. How do you like that? One of the reasons why I am pushing Judge Janet Protasiewicz so strongly, she's a great prosecutor, great judge, Milwaukee County prosecutor, homicide and sexual assault for more than 20 years, one of the best judges in the state, running against Dan Kelly. Dan Kelly is MAGA, election denier. He would have decertified the last election. He's a gerrymanderer. Janet Protasiewicz has said, just bring another gerrymander suit in front of me so I can have my say. And 4-3, we'd have fair maps. If Moore v. Harper is decided the worst way, they would say Janet Protasiewicz can't even do that. This is commie government. I'll tell you where they have commie government: in Moscow, Russia, in North Korea, in Beijing, China. They have commie government there. Caracas, Venezuela, Havana, Cuba. They do not have it in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and they're never going to have it in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, or Chicago, or New York. So to Wisco Paul's point, that's what's at stake. And it looks like the three intermediate tarantulas, the three biggest tarantulas with the furriest legs, are Alito, Thomas, and Gorsuch. The three intermediate tarantulas, still tarantulas, but are thinking, oh my God, if we do this, there will be a revolution. And you know what happens in revolutions. We better be careful. So Wisco Paul's question was, how can they go intermediate on this? And it's fairly easy. First of all, this case shouldn't even be in the U.S. Supreme Court. Do you know what that means? It means that 4 of the 9 justices wanted to hear it. That's ominous, because it only takes 5 to overrule it. That means Alito, Gorsuch, Clarence Thomas voted to take it. I know what they're going to do. But at least one of the other minor tarantulas voted for it, too. They voted for it, too. Now, there has got to be a public uproar. You have got to call every elected official you can think of, including our senators, members of Congress, the governor, and all of them, Democrat or Republican, say, we're not going to put up with not being able to vote for president, and we're not going to put up for perpetually gerrymandered legislatures and perpetually gerrymandered maps. We want fair maps. You must go to the polls in the February primary and vote for Janet Protasiewicz. You must go to the polls in April in the general election and vote for Janet Protasiewicz. We've got to have fair maps. And I think the power structure in the Republican Party has gone too far. They just got beaten badly in the Senate in the midterms, and they barely got any more seats in the House. And they are pressing to take away your right to vote forever, forever, for a fair legislature or for a president. There will be no more fake electors. Their fakeness will be enshrined in fraud and in the Republican Party. The Republican Party is a commie party. It's a fraud party. and it's stripping us of our democracy, pay attention. We're going to a break. The lines are open, 844-967-2789. A lot more back after the break.
I keep my eyes wide open all the time. I keep the ends out for the tie that binds. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine, I walk the line. Because you're mine.
Don't let me down. Welcome back to Matt Flynn Director. Our lines are open, 844-967-2789. I'm going to give you another example of a local race where you can continue the fight against commie government. Remember what I've said before, fascism creeps in on little cat's feet. That's a line from a great Carl Sandburg poem. It has nothing to do with fascism. Nothing to do with fascism. Talking about fog coming in off the water. He says, the fog creeps in on little cat's feet. Fascism creeps in on little cat's feet, one decision at a time, one judicial decision at a time by a non-elected judiciary. But there are things you can do on the elective side to fight back. And I've told you one, the most important right now, state Supreme Court. One of the election deniers is resigning, or I should say she's not running for re-election. There's an open seat. And if we capture that in the interest of democracy, we'd have 4-3, we'd have fair maps. Janet Protasiewicz, Judge Janet, one of the best prosecutors and judges in the state, is running. You got to vote for her in February and April. Now, but there's another race on the ballot then. I talked about it yesterday. I broke the news, actually. A Senate district. Suburban Milwaukee, you have the North Shore, Menominee Falls, Germantown, Deansville. We have a new candidate in that one, as of yesterday, Jody Habersinikin. I know Jody. Very fine person, very honest, very hardworking. She has 4 children. She's a very hard worker, as you can imagine. And she also is a talented conservation lawyer. She's been very active in enforcing the Great Lakes Compact to stop pollution of the Great Lakes. Well, there's a new Republican in against her. That is of yesterday, the president of Deansville. It's a suburb of Milwaukee. It's an exurb. His name is Van Mobley, M-O-B-L-E-Y. And he is a Trump Republican. Janelle Branchon, one of the assemblywomen there, also announced she's a Trump Republican, one of the worst. And Don Knoedl, another one, and a Concordia student named Robert Albrightson. I think they're going to chew each other up. And I think that the Republican nominee may very well be Janelle Branchon because she's the most Trump-like. Jody Habersinikin can beat her. You must vote in February and April for the Supreme Court. And if you're around Milwaukee in this district, definitely vote for Jody Habersinikin. She can win. We'll go to the lines. We're going to squeeze you both in. Joe of Madison, my friend. Thanks for calling. What's your mind today, Joe?
Hey, thanks, Matt. I'm not sure if you have time to go in this direction, but I'd be curious your thoughts. The subpoenas that came out for the local officials in Madison in Maricopa County and in Wayne County in Michigan about the alternative slates of electors that were assembled, and also included, I guess, a subpoena for Jim Troupas, who was the Dane County-based attorney who was very involved with Trump in getting this going, and then also is apparently has a connection as a lawyer in some regard for Ron Johnson. My question is, Matt, as a lawyer, as you look at this, do you find it interesting that Ron Johnson didn't receive a subpoena too, or do you feel that this is they're just doing the local officials first and then see how it branches out from there? I'd be curious as to your thoughts.
Yeah, thanks very much. Let me tell you what I think the strategy normally would be, and I think it is true here. Jack Smith is a very talented special prosecutor. He was appointed by the attorney general Jack Smith was the assistant U.S. attorney in the Middle District of Tennessee, appointed by Trump. This guy is not a some kind of a Democrat, but he plays by the book. And so what they've done here is, for instance, with the two clerks in Wisconsin and Dane County, Milwaukee, these are people who are friendly. They have been asked to respond to what communications did Trump or his campaign have with you? What did he try to get you to do? You know, they want to build on, for instance, what he did with Brad Raffensperger in Georgia. And the same thing is true of clerks in urban areas in Arizona and Michigan. Now, there's two questions. One is what further subpoenas would be coming, and the second one is of whom? Now, Ron Johnson is a natural because he was carrying around the Michigan state electors, the fake electors, not the real ones, the Michigan fake electors. And an obvious question is, and what, in Pete's sake, is the senator from Wisconsin doing carrying around the Michigan fake electors? The answer is, I'll tell you the answer, but they want to hear it from him because he was going to stick a knife in Michigan and somebody else would stick a knife in Wisconsin. And he could say, I stuck up for Wisconsin. The other guys could say, I stuck up for Michigan. The January 6th committee asked to interview him. They asked to interview him. And he said, pound sand. He can't pound sand to a subpoena. I suspect that Jack Smith will do that. But you build the case, and what Jack Smith is doing is finding out communications by Trump's campaign with the clerks. And in the case of the other lawyer, who is the Republican Trump lawyer, he was into it up to his eyeballs, and they're going to ask him about Ron Johnson. What you do is you don't start out with Al Capone. You start out with a mule. You start out with a runner in the street. And then he says, well, I'm only a mule, but I met with Al five times. Oh, when did you do it? And you get it under oath and you bill. Now, the second question, though, Joe, and I have a concern about this, is what are we waiting for? I mean, how many dead bodies you got to see lying around? I mean, how many dead bodies you got to see lying around? This is an Inspector Clouseau, you know, stepping over the dead bodies, looking for clues. I mean, Garland's been at this for a long time. So is the January 6th committee. What, now Jack Smith's coming in and going to chew up, what, 18 months doing this stuff? And then we come to the end of Biden's first term. And so maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Garland hasn't taken a dive. I think he hasn't totally taken a dive, but he's obviously gotten rid of the hot potato and given it to Jack Smith. But I'm thinking, you know, forget the mule and Al Capone. Just go after them all right now. Absolutely go after Ron Johnson and say, why were you carrying around the fake electors? Why did you have your chief of staff call Pence's chief of staff and say you want to slip it to him before he goes in front of the microphone? Why'd you do that? You're going to have to take the chief of staff's depositions, too. Let's do it. Let's get on with it. But that's my my answer. My answer is Jack Smith has a sterling reputation. Good guy. What he's doing is building the case of Trump's communications with the clerks and then one of his lawyers, and they'll build. My concern is, let's get going. What are we waiting for? Thanks for calling, Joe, as always. I wish we could fit other callers in. We can't. Now, this has been a great show, by the way. A lot of great call-ins. I got through about two of the eight topics I wanted to get through because of the great calls. Matt Flynn Direct will be back same time, same place tomorrow. I'm signing off for today.